CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, folks, and wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and whenever you're listening to this, we're back for another Auto Central show, and I'm fortunately joined by none other than Wandile Sishi once again. How's it, Wandy?
Hey, George, how are you? Just happy about the sun finally coming out.
Oh, yeah. Apparently there's rain predicted next week.
Yeah, let's hope. I mean, I don't know what the water crisis situation is, but rain's never bad, so let it come.
Rain's not a bad thing. Let it come. And then none other than Lawrence Mini, no relation, but maybe a distant cousin. How's it, Lawrence?
All good, George. I'm just glad to be back. It's my favorite day of the week because I get to spend some time with all you guys in studio, the virtual studio. But I see it's a bit empty in the other corner.
Yeah, so I was about to say that. Old Martin is not here with us today. He is, what did you say, badger hunting, no?
He's off in the bush hunting for honey badgers.
Honey badgers, that's what he's hunting for, honey badgers. So so we'll miss Martin today. We won't talk about you know what. So we'll leave that to possibly the week after next. But I suppose getting straight into it, and the first news story of the day is hijacking stats. Hijacking stats are on the up, and Tracker has published the vehicle crime statistics for 2020 with the groups showing data that hijacking is on the rise and has remained prevalent during lockdown, even with a significant drop in total vehicle crime. So they considered July 2019 to June 2020 and across Tracker's more than 1.1 million installed units in South African vehicles. And the statistics reveal that a number of vehicle crime activities rose nationally by 11% year on year, driven mainly by hijacking. Hijacking is up 21%. Meanwhile, the theft of vehicles remained at a similar level to the previous year. So hijacking is driving the increase in this this vehicle crime across the board. And as the country's restricted were lifted, vehicle crime activities have once again increased, with May experiencing a threefold increase in of 62% of average vehicle crime activities, while June was close to the usual levels of 93% of usual crime activities. So, you know, as lockdown lifted, vehicle crime started to increase. What do you guys think about that? I mean, gee whiz, hijacking on the increase.
So, you know, it's funny because we've been following the story for quite a while, right? In April, we saw the huge dip. But I think what it looks like is, like you said last week when we spoke about this, is I think criminals are finding opportunity in not necessarily hijacking people on the streets, but they can do it in more safe, closed environments in people's homes. And I think that's what's driving this massive surge, is that it's almost safer for them to do it now than it was before.
Safer to steal a car? Oh, my goodness.
It's a sad state of affairs. You know, it's a reality. It's a part of life in South Africa. It's almost to the point where we accept it. It's just unfortunate that it is what it is. And, you know, the only thing that we can do is just be vigilant, you know, keep an eye out, keep your head on a swivel. You know, if something looks suspicious, don't stop.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you've got to be vigilant in your own right. And the latest data also indicates that there's been a shift in the trend regarding the day of the week and the time of the day when hijacking is reported. Hijacking is now prevalent throughout the week, from Tuesday to Saturday, with only slightly less activity on Sundays and Mondays. Doesn't mean you should relax on Sundays and Mondays, because you know, it could happen to you at any time. But hijackings also reported to Tracker throughout the day from 11 o'clock to midnight. Meanwhile, theft, normal theft of vehicles, nothing normal about theft, but anyway, normal theft of vehicles are reported around the weekend and during lunchtime hours. So, you know, hostage taking which also happens with hijacks, is still a daily occurrence and remains a huge concern in the country. Furthermore, trackers reported a noticeable increase in vehicles being targeted for their loads. So there's another trend, like food or fast-moving consumer goods. You know, when you have a take-a-lot order delivered, they seem to be targeting those vehicles. You know, what do you guys think? Have you heard of any activity like this around your areas?
Yeah, Wendy. We had one of our staff members take a lot order at the gate, waiting for security to open up, hit the van. You know, the criminals are opportunistic. They see a van, and obviously there's stuff of value inside it. They don't know what it is, but they know it's valuable. So anything that has value is worth stealing.
So
once again, you just normalize it.
But it shouldn't, eh? We shouldn't have to use that word normal in the same sentence, right, Wendy?
No, I 100% agree. You know, like systems like Tracker and CarTrack are now becoming so normalized, and it shouldn't be that way. We shouldn't be getting these stats on a weekly basis and seeing increases every week. It's really showing more of the problem of the crime situation in the country. That needs to be addressed, and not necessarily the fact that people need to be installing these or having to install these systems.
Yeah.
It's a sad affair.
It is a sad affair. And, anyway, let's move on. It's a depressing thought all the time. Well, here's a better thought. Sorry, Lawrence.
Too depressing for a Monday.
Exactly. Too depressing for a Monday. Well, if you're listening to this on a Friday, we recorded this on, which day did we record it on? But it's airing on the Monday. But you can listen to it at any time. You can even listen to it at 1 o'clock if you can't sleep. The average value of a new car financed hits 350,000 Rand. Now, Auto Trader has just recently put out our car industry report, the Auto Trader car industry report. And you can go to reports.autotrader.co.za and go and download the latest car industry report, which takes into account the year ending June 2020. So the report is really fresh. The data inside the report is really fresh. And from a secondhand used car point of view, we saw the average price of a used vehicle at what, Wendy? You're up. 200.
It was 289,000 Rand, if I'm not mistaken.
Wendy knows his stuff, yes. About 9,000 Rand up year on year, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So slight vehicle price inflation from a used car point of view. 289,000 Rand is the average price of a used car sold over the last year. But when it comes to new car, the average price of a financed new car is about 350,000 Rand. Now, it goes without saying that, when a consumer opts for a used car, he's probably doing it for cost reasons. You can get a lower priced, higher spec used car than you can for new. So it doesn't surprise me. Does it surprise you guys that the average price of a new car is financed is 350,000 Rand?
Not in the slightest, especially if you look at the top 10 most sold used cars. You'll see that they are a little bit spec'd higher or more expensive cars to the top 10 most sold new cars. So just to your points, I think with the used car, you get better value for money. But of course, there's pros and cons to both.
Absolute pros and cons to both. So that's the average price of a used car, and this information comes from NAMSA. New vehicle sales declined by 29.6% to 32,396 units compared to July last year. July this year, and this shows some level of improvement in the context of June, which was down 30.7% year on year for the market, with market volumes at 31,867 units. So new cars still squarely under pressure, and the average value of a new car financed is about 350,000 Rand, which has increased in July 2020. Since July 2019, which was at about 325,000 Rand. So the average price of a new car financed increasing by over 25,000 Rand in the last year. Moving on to safe cars as opposed to prices of cars. What are the safest cars to drive in South Africa for under 200,000 Rand? Because again, if you look at the report that Autotrader released on reports.autotrader.co.za, you will notice that we talk about a surge in car search for vehicles under 200,000 Rand. I mean, consumers are under pressure at the moment. And the surge is evidence of people looking for cheaper cars. Doesn't mean that there's no search for cars over 200,000 rand. What are the safest cars, Lawrence, to drive in South Africa for under 200,000 rand?
Okay, so the AA recently released a report. They took a broad spectrum of vehicles under 200,000, which is mostly your A0 and A... and 01 class vehicles, which are, you know, your entry level cars. And they basically collated a bunch of information and put together a list. And the Peugeot 108 came out on top.
Wow. A French car.
Yes, because it has 6 airbags and it's been NCAP tested. And it has ABS and, you know, all the safety systems that you would normally find in a higher spec vehicle, but it's in a lower spec vehicle.
Wow.
The report, it caused some waves in the industry with a bunch of the other OEMs saying that the data set used to compile the report was slightly flawed.
How so?
Saying that some of the vehicles were not NCAP crash tested, so the scores that they were given were wrong, and that certain factors were not taken into consideration, like the materials of construction of the vehicle, using high tensile steels or crush zones made of aluminium, et cetera, et cetera. I sort of sit on the fence because I see what the AA was trying to do, say these are the cars that are going to be the safest for your money. And then I'm also hearing what the OEMs are saying, like, yeah, you guys are sort of right, but you've forgotten to mention these things or take these things into account, which could shake up that list quite a bit.
Okay.
You know, there were some of the vehicles that scored very, very poorly. And, you know, having driven one or two of them, I can say might have been a little bit unfair. They might you know, if they'd taken other things into consideration, it might have pushed the car up a category or down one. But yes, it's a very interesting reading. I think the report is up on Autotrader, under the news and views. You can go and have a look at the listing that was put there.
Well, thanks, Lawrence. And you go and decide. But basically, the cars that fell into the top category, which apparently has an acceptable safety, who got an email? Somebody got an email. Somebody. It's for you. Acceptable safety was, as Lawrence rightly pointed out, the Peugeot 108, Toyota Etios, Toyota Ego, VW got into the list, and Suzuki Ignis, Datsun Go, Honda Amaze, and the Kia Picanto. So go and take a look at the list. Those are the ones that have, according to this particular study, the safest or acceptable safety standards. Consider what Lawrence is saying. You know, have all the factors being taken into account, and you decide. At the end of the day, you've got to drive a car. You've got to do all the research. And I don't think it's a bad thing for the AA to have put out a report like this, because at least then the discussion, I suppose, gets going. Then, Wandi, reporting your car when it's been in an accident, or should I say reporting an accident when you've been in the car. There's apparently a new way to do this. What can you tell us about reporting accidents? Because in my belief in the past, you had to go to the traffic department when you had an accident, right?
Correct. So the kind of known way of reporting your car is to essentially within 24 hours, you have to go to the police station and report that it's happened. This is for insurance reasons. This is just essentially to protect yourself and ensure that the stats are in, everyone's sort of, you know, the incident is taken care of. But now, because of lockdown, this has caused safety concerns as well as convenience concerns, because we can't just naturally just go out and do whatever we please.
Yeah.
So essentially, the Road Traffic Management Act, the National Road Traffic Act, has kind of introduced this new process where you can report any accidents or incidents on the road online. But because of this, there are some limitations. So obviously, if it's a massive accident, you can't do that. And I think it's up to an accident that has less than five cars qualifying for this system.
Okay, that's very interesting. So so what is this what is this website that you can go and report an accident on?
So it's basically the natus.gov.za. Yeah. There's a link that we'll just attach after the show. But essentially, that's kind of the platform or the portal where you can go and report anything that happens on the roads. It's pretty simple to use. It's straightforward, and it just allows for a lot of convenience for people who, you know, have to ensure that they, not just their safety, but the people around them, safety is taken consideration when something like this happens.
I'm on the website now. So so the URL is online.natus.gov.za/crash/hash/online-crash-report. Okay. But we will post that so that you can click on it, because that's a bit of a mouthful. But it opened pretty quickly. Not bad. I don't have a bad internet connection at home, so you should be able to open this quite easily. And it starts off by giving you a couple of terms and conditions under crash reporting. And then at the bottom starts to ask you a couple of questions. These questions are, if you are sure that the crash you are reporting on complies with the terms and conditions above, those terms and conditions are, there's eight of them, click accept and continue. And before you click accept and continue, was any person injured or killed in the crash is a question, because you can't report if there was somebody injured or killed. And then, was this a hit and run? If it was a hit and run, then you also can't report it. Yeah. And then the number of vehicles involved, 1, 2, 3, or 4. And if more than those number of vehicles were involved in the crash, you also can't report it here. So so this site is very clear on what you can and can't do. If you're outside of those three questions, you have to go to the police station, right, Wandy?
Correct. So it's only for really minor damage crashes. So basically a fender bender or, you know, something really tiny.
Fender
bender. And essentially there's those conditions. On top of that, you do have only 24 hours to use the system. And it's important to know or understand that this is binding. So you can use it for insurance, but more importantly, everything that you put across can be used against you or for you. Yeah.
Just like when you fill in that unreadable form when you go to the police station to report, right? All of that information gets stored and gets used in any disputes. But you do get a case number, I'm assuming, and you can use it for insurance purposes. Makes it life a hell of a lot easier than having to go down to your nearest police station, because that's the current requirement. And as Wandy said, you have to, legal requirements, report a crash within 24 hours or the next working day.
Correct.
Working days, remember, are not Saturdays, Sundays, or public holidays. So there you have it. I think that's a really good initiative. I think well done to Natus for doing that. And we opened the website. Seems quite fast.
No, speedy.
Speedy. Have any of the two of you ever suffered from, or I'm not going to ask you if you are a road rager, but have you ever suffered from somebody with road rage?
I have, yes.
Okay. Give us the story. Give us the lowdown.
Many moons ago, and I'm talking back in the 90s, shortly after I got my driver's license, I was driving down a main road and was chased by a gentleman in a bucky who seemed to think that I almost ran over his kid, who happened to be jaywalking across the road. He then chased me down, pushed me off the road, and proceeded to smash my driver's side window. So, yeah, that's where I'm going to leave it.
Wow.
So road rage is a very real thing, and it's you could be a victim of it, or you could be the perpetrator of it.
That's very true. Wandy, have you perpetrated?
I've never been a victim of it, but I must admit, I do get a bit hyped up on the roads, but I never put anybody's life in danger. It's always just within the cabin of the vehicle where I scream and shout.
It's your outlet. Well, you know, you'd be surprised that, you know, many people, when they get in a car for some reason, and I don't know why it is, their personality changes. They become invincible. For some reason, a car turns people into invincible hulks or something, because I don't know whether they think they're protected and they're in the shell, and suddenly they're in incredible Hulk, not well, and invincible Hulk, and then get themselves into situations. I suppose, you know, screaming and shouting and swearing like Wandy does inside his car, and you know, not nobody else sees it, is okay. It's safe. It's an outlet. But the moment you start to take that further, it can get you into some serious trouble. And one gentleman in the United States decided to take his road rage out on a vehicle that was autonomous by Waymo. So this vehicle did not have a driver inside, and the Waymo camera caught this guy by the name of Tang swerving in and out of the lanes in front of the Waymo autonomous vehicle, and then eventually brake tested it. And yeah, you know what brake testing is, right?
Yes.
Brake testing, I think it all kind of, you know, same thing.
And then proceeded to cause an accident. So Mr. Tang was arrested. And
yeah, I think what's interesting about the story is that he was actually an operator for Waymo.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it feels like he knew the system. He knew what he was doing. I think more than just rage or anything like that, he was just being silly. And, you know, Lawrence is busy telling us a story about people who play around with robots. And this is exactly it. I think this person was just silly.
This sounds like something that would have happened in the south of America, with the guy going, "Here, Jeb, hold my beer and watch this. I know this vehicle. Watch this," you know, and of course, you know, showing off to his mates.
I don't know if it was so much just a prank, because Mr. Tang was a former operator, as you rightly pointed out, but he was fired from his role at the contractor. And you know, when someone's disgruntled, is it a joke or is it road rage?
Yeah, maybe he was trying to make some money on the side. Oh, my neck.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't know so much.
Only in America.
Only in the United States. Anywho, let's get ourselves into some auto talk, and this week Lawrence is going to be giving us a roundup of the last week's stories. Go for it, Lawrence.
Yeah, so it's been a very interesting week in motoring in South Africa. The couple of highlights from the week, on I think it was Wednesday, I sat in on a meeting with the execs from VW, and they sort of gave us a lowdown of what's been happening in 2020 and what's going to be happening for the rest of the year. There's some very, very interesting things came out of the meeting. We will be getting the new T-Roc in November.
Nice.
The first 1.5 TSI, the T-Cross is now on sale. You can get them from your dealerships. Later half of October, we will be getting a special edition Polo Vivo, which
what's,
is
what's special about this Vivo?
Well, this one will be it will have extras and features which pertain to the South African ingenuity. I think it was last year's Festival of Motoring, we saw some of the things that VW South Africa can do when they want to put out special edition vehicles. Another very, very important piece of information, VW offers something called a data plug, which is a thing that plugs into the car and it can give you all sorts of readouts on your WeConnect Go app. Now, it was only available on new cars. And what VW has now done is they've retrofitted the system so you can now purchase this for your older VW.
Oh, wow.
So, very, very important piece of information. They only cost $950, and you take it into the dealership, they open up the dashboard, plug it in, boom, and there you got it. I think there's only one vehicle that doesn't work, and I think that's the 2008 Polo Vivo. Otherwise, everything else from 2008 up until now, you can fit the data plug to it.
At the VW meeting, did they speak about the I know there was a lower spec T-Cross that was going to come out, that was going to be like sub 300,000.
Yes, still to be confirmed, but it was the 70 kilowatt trend line, 1 liter, but there's no confirmation on that yet. And then on a little piece of information that they let slip, this will make George very, very happy. There are currently 6 e-Golfs in South Africa that are being tested by dealerships and publications.
Where,
but they let slip where
are these? Where are these located?
I know who has them, but I can't tell you. A little bit of information that will make you very happy, George, is that by 2022, we will have ID4.
Oh, nice. That's the SUV model, right?
Yeah. So we're not getting ID3, but we are going to get ID4. So these plans are underway. So by the middle of 2022, we should have electric VWs. Very good news.
Yoo-hoo!
Yeah. So then on to Kia. For the last 3 weeks, I've been following this story about the Kia Sonet. Now, I first heard about this in the beginning of the year when I was on the Seltos launch. And the Kia Sonet is basically Kia's answer to the Hyundai Venue. So it's a little bit smaller than, the T-Cross or one of those type of vehicles. And I saw first the sneak peeks, then I saw the artist renderings, and I was like, wow, this thing is going to be awesome looking. And then they officially released the production model images, and I was a little disappointed because the car looks nothing like the artist rendering. But it does still look very good. And from what I can see in the press releases that have come out, this vehicle is going to be packed to the hilt with technology and, really, really nice features and finishes and things like that. So it's coming out of India, same factory that makes the Seltos. And we should be seeing them hopefully before the end of the year. Very interesting news there.
Interesting stuff. Tell us about the Geely, because apparently Geely is hoping to become the global automotive heavyweight with Volvo's help. How is this taking place?
Okay, so Geely is a Chinese company, started out of a warehouse back in the 50s. And this guy went on, and eventually they got so big that they bought Volvo. So they own Volvo. And they've very much, we know the situation, big holding company comes in, buys a business and leaves them to run themselves. And that's Volvo running on their own. Geely benefits from the technology sharing. So they have their own brand of vehicles. So they're making their own vehicles. They also have another subsidiary called Lincoln Co., which is you order the car online and it's a sports car. They just did a massive run around the Nürburgring and fried everybody's brains. But yeah, the Geely, very, very interesting vehicle. The problem is it's the name. The thing looks like a Volvo, but I don't know. They got a lot of convincing to do.
Well, yeah, it's starting to look like a Volvo, and looking at this image. So I don't know.
Very, very good looking vehicle.
Well, let's move closer to home. Ford Ranger Thunder launched in South Africa. Tell us about the Ford Ranger Thunder.
Okay, so also another one of those vehicles that I've been talking about for about 3 weeks on the show now. Essentially, you get the Ford Ranger Wildtrak, which is the top spec, and then you get the Ford Ranger Raptor, which is the ultimate one right on top. And for some other reason, Ford thought it would be a good idea that they needed something that sits between these two. That's their explanation. Unfortunately, the Thunder doesn't come anywhere near close to the Raptor. It looks like one, but it doesn't have all the fancy gadgets and everything.
You just like the Raptor, don't you?
Well, yeah. So the Ranger Thunder is basically a wild track in a fancy dress with makeup.
I've got to consume that. The Thunder is a wild track in a fancy dress with makeup.
Yes. So essentially what they did is they took the word wild track out of all the branding and replaced it with Thunder. So the embroidery on the seats, the stickers on the side of the vehicle, all of that kind of stuff. It all now just – they just replaced Wildtrak with Thunder.
So is this a Wildtrak under that fancy dress?
Exactly, 100% a wild track underneath. So basically all they've done is they've taken a wild track and done what so many of our local consumers do and basically threw a bunch of accessories at it. So it has blacked out wheels. It has a lockable tonneau cover. It has the fashion roll bar, and it has a grille with that, that sort of mimics what the Mustang looks like.
You know, I think it looks good.
I take nothing away from it. It's a very, very good looking vehicle. I just don't know if I can justify the price difference between this and a Wildtrak.
It's got red stitching on black leather. It's got red stitching on black leather. It looks beautiful.
The Wildtrak has orange stitching on black leather. I don't know if these are going to be limited edition or not. Yeah. I can only assume that they're only going to make so many of them.
Yeah.
So if you want a Wildtrak but you don't want to have the name associated with it, go with a Thunder. Like I said, not a bad-looking vehicle, but it's the same technically underneath the skin as a Wildtrak. It's basically a sticker pack. And take nothing away from Ford. It's a really great idea. It's not like any other OEM hasn't tried to do something similar with a black edition or a limited edition or a something rider or whatever. But yeah, we'll give them that. I personally can't wait to get one on test just to see if there is any difference. You know, if the red piping around the grille will make it go any faster. I don't know.
Well, it looks cooler.
Yeah, it definitely does. I think a lot of people within the segment in South Africa do like the aesthetic, you know, bits of it. So I think it's going to do okay.
I will say this, though. Ford has done this very tastefully because, I mean, I have seen some wild tracks that it looks like somebody drove through the flea market and every accessory they could find stuck to it. So this is done very tastefully. It's accessorized, but not overly done and not poorly done either. So congratulations, Ford. I hope you guys sell plenty of these.
Hmm. You are a Ford fanboy, Lawrence.
I'm listening to it. He loves Ford.
I said I wasn't a Ford fanboy, but give props where it's due.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. You know, so thanks for that, Lawrence. Appreciate the update. Let's get into some technology talk. And Wandi, 3D printing. You know about 3D printing, don't you?
I do a little bit. I've dabbled a little bit in 3D printing. One of my good friends actually uses 3D printing in his kind of in his business.
Yeah.
So yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. Okay. Have you ever seen and held and touched a 3D printed article?
I have. Yeah. It's but it was made out of plastic. And I think now what's really insane is that 3D printers aren't just using plastic to kind of print things, but they're using some real metals, which is really pushing the boundaries. And I think that's the future of making or manufacturing things.
Well, talking about 3D printing using different materials. I saw a video of a 3D printed house. Okay.
Oh, so yeah.
Imagine that. Have you seen it? Imagine that for a second. There's this humongous printer. So what it does is it feeds cement through the printing nozzle, and goes about actually printing the walls of the house, layer for layer for layer, which I think is brilliant. You just have this big construction, what looks like a massive printer above the area, and then it goes about printing the walls of the house. I don't know about the roof so much. Maybe that's a different story, but definitely the whole structure of the house just came alive. Have you seen 3D printed objects, Lawrence?
I have indeed, and I have a friend who specializes in 3D printers. I have modeled things in CAD and had them 3D printed. I know quite a lot about 3D printing. And like I said, the different types of plastic. You get soft plastic, hard wearing plastic. You can print in titanium. You can print in brass. You can print in all sorts of – and it really all depends on the machine and the nozzle head and the clarity of what you want the print to come out at. So you can have a print take 5 minutes,
yeah,
or you can have a print take 6 hours. the longer it takes, the neater and cleaner it is. And I sort of know where this is going because it was an article about 3D printing race car parts.
Yeah, so that's exactly where I was getting to, and that is the Belgian racing team Heli had an engine problem. And under race conditions, the manifold of this four-cylinder turbo diesel, its BMW 1 Series, exploded, bursting along an ultrasonically welded seam. Now, if you imagine parts in cars are welded together, bolted together, and they've got seals and seams, and anytime you try and bolt something together or weld it together, that is the weakest link in the chain. Any welding is weaker than the stuff around it. It creates weakness on the edge of the weld. The welding itself is not necessarily weak, but that join becomes a weak point. And this exploded under race conditions. Ultrasonically welded seam held together the manifold's two halves. The team then tried reinforcing the seam, but when the car returned to the track during the middle of the race, there was a familiar bang and loss of power and a pit stop for the replacement of the manifold. And they couldn't get this right. And so what they did was they substituted this manifold and got it 3D printed. You know, Wendy, I mean, what do you think about car parts now being 3D printed? A manifold. I mean, there's huge amounts of heat in that part of the car.
Yeah. Well, if you take motorsport, for instance, it's the highest strain that you're going to put on essentially the entire vehicle, right? And to make these substitute parts takes weeks because there's molds that need to happen. There's lots of testing that needs to happen. But with 3D printing, this team managed to get down the replacement of this down to 10 hours.
Wow.
For a racing team to get weeks taken out in 10 hours. And what's more impressive is that the new fabricated part was stronger and lighter in less than half the time. I mean, literally exponentially less the time. So I honestly think for smaller teams and all teams as a whole, this is a huge cost-cutting opportunity. And if we don't start seeing this in the next months, surely in the next few years, large parts of vehicles are going to be 3D printed.
Well, I can't wait because, you know, the more we get done on an automated basis, the better, right? I mean, Lawrence, electric cars are the thing of the future. Why not just print the entire car?
Well, that is the idea. Eventually, most modern engines that get made now, the rapid prototyping is done in 3D printing.
Yeah.
Why go and make a mold, cast something in steel, and then find out that it's flawed or wrong when you can have a rapidly prototyped 3D printed version of something? I mean, I've seen entire engines 3D printed to see how things are going to interact with each other in real space. When it comes to the future of automobiles, where we start talking about electric cars that are made out of exotic materials, higher, you know, thermoplastics and things like that. Yeah. Why, you know, lay out a sheet of plastic and then form it into a door panel or whatever. You just 3D print the thing. And as the technology with 3D printers gets better and the speed gets better,
yeah,
and the ability to make parts faster and better than and not taking 10 hours to print an inlet manifold, you know, it's the future of where automotive technology is going.
No, yeah, I totally
insane.
Agree.
Absolutely. It's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing that we're at a point where you can just print out like an engine.
This is one of those things that I'm really excited about, but I never talk about because the minute I start talking about X, Y, Z axis machines and, you know, MDA plastics going through this size nodule, people switch off. They're not interested in what I have to say. It's one of those subjects I'm really excited about.
Well, maybe because of the deep technicality. So, you know, moving on to our next bit of tech talk. And this crowd worries me because have they actually put a car on the road? And I don't think so. And that's Lucid Motors. Lucid Motors hasn't put a car on the road, but now they're claiming that their car has an estimated driving range. It's an electric car, in case you didn't know, of 832 kilometers as verified in independent testing. You know, are these guys for real?
How did they get to that number if they haven't built a car? Have they built a
prototype?
Well,
no, they built prototypes, but they haven't put a full on production car out on the road like Tesla has. So you know,
it's a big difference between having a prototype and actually having a production ready car.
Exactly.
Prototypes can do amazing things. Production ready, maybe not so much.
Yeah, I think we'll have to wait for the car to come out, especially with the electric vehicles, because what they claim is essentially their biggest sort of value proposition or selling point. And what you get when you purchase it is not necessarily what you always were told. So I think we're going to have to wait a while to see how this vehicle performs. But I honestly thoroughly hope that they have cracked this, above 500 mile, 800 kilometer sort of range, because that would be a game changer.
Well, let's see. I mean, I've been hearing about Lucid Air now for probably 3 years. The Lucid Air was actually unveiled in December 2016. And I don't know if there's a Lucid Air on the road.
I mean, this is, to be honest with you, George, it's the first time I'm hearing the name. I mean, even I know about Rivian, who have yet to make something. But yeah, I've never heard of Lucid, so...
Smoke and mirrors. You think it's just smoke and mirrors?
Right? I don't know. I mean, I hope it's real, because, you know, we need some serious, first to market electric only brands in the world. So I'm hoping Lucid makes it big, but, let's not
push this technology forward.
Yes. Let's not be lucid about it. Get the car on the road, right? hopefully we see Lucid Air driving on the roads of the world at some point, and hopefully on the roads of South Africa. Bring the Tesla here first, though, and then Wandy, tell us about this new battery technology, or I suppose not battery technology, it's just a design technology in China, where they aim to make EVs drive further by doing something with the chassis.
So there's a Tesla supplier in China called CATL, and essentially they want to start integrating battery cells within electric car chassis. So what this does is that it sheds a lot of casings that, are required in current systems, which essentially make the system a bit bulky and not as efficient. So by doing this, they claim that they can get EVs to drive over 800 kilometers, which, like Lucid Air, is kind of the milestone number that everyone's chasing right now. Unfortunately, we don't have a date of when this is going to launch, but they think it's going to be before 2030. So that just goes back to the Lucid Air chat of just how impactful it would be if they actually got it in literally a year from now. Whereas this Chinese company that does this for, this is what they do for Tesla, saying that, it's going to take a little while to get there. So we'll kind of have to just wait and see who's going to be the first sort of OEM or battery manufacturer to get batteries to this 500 mile, 800 kilometer sort of range.
Yeah. Well, I mean, battery technology is rapidly, rapidly evolving, and I've got no doubt. But this is not really battery technology, is it? It's more a case of just putting more batteries in the car by replacing other things like the chassis. Not replacing the chassis, but making the chassis a battery effectively.
Battery. Correct. Yeah. I mean, there's still details to come out of this, but essentially, like you said, it's just finding efficient ways to get the best out of the entire space of the vehicle. It will be interesting to see what happens. They're not the only people who are thinking this way. There's a few players in the game. It's just great to see that across the board, everyone's trying to be innovative and finally get this, the EV generation or revolution moving.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a revolution, and one day it'll become an evolution. But at the moment, it's still an evolution. And then American Automobile Association. Did I get that right? Has done some testing and finds driver assistance tech is far from reliable. So two tests done by the AAA in the United States during the past 2 years show that partially automated driving systems don't always function properly And they're recommending that car companies limit their use. You know, what kind of systems are these guys talking about?
Okay, so from what I can see, they're talking about things like lane keeping assist, city safe, automatic braking. You know, the driver assistance programs.
Full self-driving.
No, because I think there's only two or three companies that are specializing in that. And I think everybody's already seen that that technology in the hands of the layman, not such a good idea. I'm actually going to call BS on what these guys are saying, because I've driven almost all of the driver assistance packages that they're talking about in this article. And 99% of the time, the systems work. I mean, I even put the Subaru EyeSight to the test.
I drove at a
wall at 60 k's an hour, and the car automatically braked. It did that. The video is up on site. You can go have a look.
I didn't know that, Lawrence.
Yeah, no, I did the test. It was quite.
Oh, so you didn't increase the shutter speed.
Drove at a wall at 60 k's an hour, and the car did what it was supposed to. Unfortunately, I'm still one of those old school motorists that I don't fully trust the system. I know it's going to work, but I'm that guy that's going to hover with.
So how did it feel heading towards the wall at 60 k's an hour?
I closed my eyes and hoped that the system would work, and it did. It recognized the wall, and it automatically braked the car.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Oh, that's incredible.
It was an experiment.
Well, for everybody's benefit, Lawrence is a motoring journalist, which means that for a living, what Lawrence does, besides be on Auto Central, what Lawrence does is he drives cars for a living. And then he tells you all about them. So Lawrence got a lot of experience in driving different cars. So I take his opinion seriously, as opposed to, you know, looking at this AAA bit of study, for lack of a better term. But you know, taking the risk of driving a car towards a wall at 60 k's an hour and expecting the system to work. That must have been scary. That must have been.
I had assurance from the manufacturer that it works. Would work.
Ah,
that it worked,
and it did. So because you're still sitting here,
exactly. I have to admit though, there was no danger. The wall was made out of plastic barriers, so had things gone pear shaped, I just would have ended up with a scratched bumper. But the fact is that it recognized it and it worked.
Yeah, fair enough.
I was
like, oh, you should have left it at a brick wall. I was like,
I'm brave, but I'm not stupid, George. what I'm saying basically, what AAA is, I think they've got the wrong end of the stick.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be admonishing the OEMs for including these systems in the cars, but rather be saying, educate the people that are buying the cars and that are going to use the systems and say, this is not a replacement for your operational, you know, input on the vehicle. I mean, I've done the experiment. I've driven from Johannesburg to Pretoria without touching a single control in a car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Highly, highly inadvisable. But like I said, I'm that guy that's sitting with my hands hovering just over the steering wheel and over the brake pedal because I just don't 100% trust the system. And I think that is maybe what they're complaining about, is saying the automotive manufacturers can include these things, but they should be telling people this is not a replacement for you. You can't just climb into a Tesla and expect the thing to take you to the nearest coffee shop while you read the newspaper, because you're going to crash into something.
It's not supposed to be like a substitute for you driving. It's literally an aid or a safety precaution, if you may.
Exactly.
I
100% agree with OEMs including these things in cars, but it's not a replacement for driver training. You should still be 100% in control of the car and be able to drive the car if the system fails.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these are not replacements for humans yet. So I agree with Lawrence. I think is the AAA test is a little bit unfair and taking things a little bit too far. I mean, let's be honest. For over 100 years, these car manufacturers have been physical technology manufacturers, and not technology in the sense of the word for software. They are not software engineers. So the world's still trying to figure this out. You know, give them a chance to do that. And that's why we don't have fully autonomous vehicles that are allowed to drive on everybody's roads at the moment, is because we're figuring this out, which means that you can't drive towards a wall, a brick one, at 60 k's an hour and cry foul when the thing doesn't stop. You know, it doesn't mean that that the technology doesn't work, but maybe the driver, as Lawrence said, doesn't know how to use the product. I mean, if there's no lines on a road, how do you expect the car to know where the hell it is, right?
And that's that 1% I was talking about. 99% of the time, the system is going to work and it's going to work as indicated. Mm. But it is only capable. It's a machine. It only works on the input it receives.
Yeah.
So if the sensor on the windscreen is blocked, it's not going to get any input from there, so the system won't work. If there's a giant wasp that flew into the radar detector on the front of the car, system's not going to work. So it's only as good as the input it receives.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm saying the systems are great to have, and they are, I say, make more. But the OEMs need to sit back and say, you know what, guys, these systems are great. They're here for your protection. But remember, they're only as good as the input they receive. So please don't let go of the steering wheel and expect the car to drive itself for 50 kilometers.
Yeah, no, for flipping sure. And ladies and gentlemen, that gets us to the end of our Auto Central show for this week. And it's been an amazing time. Lawrence and Wandy, thanks for joining. We missed Martin. Any final thoughts, Wandy?
Yeah, going back to the first story, just we say this every week. Please be safe. Just watch out for yourself. Look around. Things are weird right now.
They are indeed.
That should be completely fine.
Good stuff. Any final thoughts, Lawrence?
Let motorsport reign. Congratulations, Brad Binder.
Yeah.
I'm happy that Formula One is back up and running. And, you know, I couldn't give a damn about the politics involved. I'm just glad that they're racing. And South African motor racing is back up and running, sans spectators, but we are back racing. Wandy, I hope to hear more about your Formula One report.
Yeah, so from next time, we're going to start hearing a little bit more about motor racing. We're going to try and put some MotoGP in there, seeing as Brad Binder is up as a contender as a South African. So let's continue to do that from our next show. But right now, we're out of time. Thank you for joining. My name is George Meany, as usual, and this is the Auto Central Show. See you next time.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.